Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Gird your loins, gays. The who's who of comedy are making their way down under.
Josh Thomas brings his comedy show Whoopsie Daisy back home this October, beginning on the north coast of New South Wales in the delightful Brunswick Heads, before taking on Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Cairns, Brisbane and Perth.
Douglas, Hannah Gadsby's follow-up to Nanette, arrives in December, touring Melbourne, Hobart, Canberra, Sydney and Brisbane before a hop, skip and a jump over to New Zealand.
And an evening with David Sedaris sees the renowned American author visit Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Canberra in January.
I want to see that one. Go to comedy.com.au for full touring details and to book tickets.
Hello, Dan from Lip Media here. I'm running podcast workshops for aspiring women and LGBTQIA+ hosts in Melbourne. Pick up skills, tips and tricks you can apply to the creation of your own podcast, from idea through to publishing. You can also discuss your podcast themes and ideas with the group and connect with other aspiring podcasters. Spots in our next workshop on Saturday the 5th of October are filling fast. Head to lip.media to book now. That's lip.media to book now.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today. Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a definitive weekly news source for contemporary gays.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can be.
You can follow us on Instagram at Gays Revolting Pod or join our Facebook group at The Gays Are Revolting.
And if you'd like to support the podcast and listen to our after shows, head over to patreon.com/GaysRevoltingPod for a heap of extra content. Hello, everybody.
Hello,
we're
Kyle.
Back again. Unfortunately, minus Tom this week because he is actually at his friend Bruce's funeral today. So
very
he couldn't
sad
make
news.
It.
Very sad.
Yeah. You do have the baby that was stolen by the dingo, me, Kyle.
I still don't get it.
Dingo stole my baby.
I get that, but why is it you?
Didn't it like, I don't know.
You're not even.
Think of a better one.
Okay. I don't know.
I wasn't even here at the time. Anyway.
And you've also got me, Luke, the host that's been secretly recording your conversations way before Google Home made it okay to do. And we're also joined by Daniel Santangeli to co-host in Tom's absence this week.
Boop, boop, boop.
We thought it was a bit of pressure to ask him to read himself on the spot with no notice, so
yes,
we'll save him that.
But I'm open to other people reading me.
Oh, no. I'm not comfortable with that.
And some more exciting news too, we have our first ever road trip revolting tour.
That's
happening
true.
With an Adelaide show coming up in November.
Radelaide, as some people call it.
Yeah. Former disgraced hometown.
Yes, you're showing your face again there. How do you
returning.
Feel about that?
I'm thinking,
will they welcome you back with open arms?
Absolutely not. And the funny thing is, we're booked at the Rhino Room, which is a venue I've been kicked out of.
It sounds aggressive.
Like about 100 times as a teenager. But luckily I Googled, they've changed like locations and management or whatever. So that was a bit of a like...
Oh, they won't recognize me.
Yeah, totally. But I'm pumped. I'm pumped. My parents have told me not to disgrace the family name.
That's good. So well, that ship has sailed.
That's
but I'm excited to see Adelaide. I've never been there before, so...
Party.
Party.
Have you announced the special guest yet? I'm dying to know.
It's Natalie Imbruglia.
This podcast just went neck level.
Head to our Facebook page to find the event and book your ticket. Because
it's not that hard.
If it's like our last two shows, they'll sell out and people have to...
People want to see the shit show.
Scalp it on eBay or something.
It's it'll be fine. Now, Daniel, you're currently the program manager at Midsummer Festival, but you've just resigned. What are you moving on to?
Yeah, resigned is such a mean word. No, I have resigned, but I've been appointed as the incoming artistic director at Footscray Community Arts Centre.
Ooh, fancy.
Which is this incredible arts centre that's in Footscray in the western region of Melbourne. And yeah, I just found out a couple of weeks ago that I was successful for the role.
Congrats.
So I am terrified. But it does mean that I am sadly leaving Midsummer Festival. So I'm still at Midsummer right now. I'm wrapping up the program, which...
Will you still go to Midsummer Festival?
Oh my God. You do
or
not know...
Or are you banned after you leave?
No, they can't get rid of people who've been there before. No, you don't know how horrible it is going to carnival to work.
Oh yeah, that would be weird. Like, everybody. I want to do the fun part.
Yeah. It's kind of creepy, to be honest. Like, you're walking around and just watching everybody have fun. So
that's interesting.
I get to actually go to carnival and enjoy myself. Yay. And I get to go to the VIP bar as well, which so...
Ooh, you know, privileges.
Yeah.
Privileges. And does anyone ever really leave Midsummer?
No. I'm still there right now.
Just stay with us all the time.
Yeah, they better make me a life member.
How long were you actually there for?
So I've been with Midsummer for 3 years. Okay. And the program for the festival that I'm currently putting together will be my fourth festival.
Wow,
so
that's quite a chunk.
Yeah, it's been a long 3 years. We've done a lot of work over that time to really sort of turn the organization around and take it to a place where people really expect what a queer arts and cultural festival should be in 2018-19. I feel I'm leaving feeling very, very proud of the work that I've done.
I can't imagine how incredible it must feel or must have felt to be a part of putting together Midsummer for all of us, like people like Kyle and I, to go to and enjoy. Especially the growth that it's seen in those last 3 years or so that you've mentioned. What is it actually like managing a program like Midsummer? And what sort of shows are you responsible for curating?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm really proud of the work that we've done at Midsummer Festival. I mean, in the last 3 years, we've had a 40% growth in audiences, which is ridiculous. That's like a sort of once in a organizational lifetime kind of growth. Yep, yeah. And we've also grown the size of the program overall by 40% as well. So, but what it actually looks like in the background, I mean, we're a tiny team. There's about five of us year round, and then during the festival, we kind of get a bit bigger. So I think a lot of people think that Midsummer is this huge organization, but we're tiny. And it's a lot of emails and a lot of Excel spreadsheets. So it's actually really quiet. I mean, I really enjoy it, but it's just like any other kind of desk job. Yeah. But I think what I'm most proud of is a project that we ran last festival called Body, which was a suite of projects that was focused on trans, gender diverse, and also intersex artists as well. And it was a whole suite of projects that we worked in partnership with Arts Centre Melbourne and Arts House. And what was great about that project was that prior to that, there hadn't been much representation from trans and gender diverse artists. There was zero visibility for people who are intersex. What we were able to do was actually to bring those people that were on the margins of mainstream queer culture into the heart of what we do. Mm-hmm. And there are so many examples of other smaller projects that we've done where we've brought in queer young people, queer First Nations people, queer people with disability, queer mature aged and seniors, you know. The work that we've done over the last 3 years is actually to actually make Midsummer Festival reflect the diversity of the queer communities
that
are out there.
Itself, yeah.
Which is very sad for me because, you know, I'm a gay man and so I don't get... I feel like I've been making a festival for all the other communities.
And as well as being a gay man, you're also an independent theatre director too.
That's a classic combo,
yes,
right?
Classic. Do you get to do much directing these days?
Yeah. So the last show I directed was literally the month before I took up the role at Midsummer Festival. So I have a theatre practice that is immersive theatre. Cool. So it's usually for small audiences, usually pretty full-on work to kind of experience. It's usually like shoved in a car and driven around.
I love that stuff.
But he loves that stuff sexually.
That is my thing as well.
Yeah, being kidnapped.
No, those theatre shows are intense. Oh. I love those ones.
When it's done right, it's incredible. There's a lot of bad immersive theatre out there as well. Mm-hmm. So, when you go and see work, you know, that maybe like Punch Drunk Do that we did Sleep No More, which is this amazing kind of work where you go into a hotel and you follow the performers around, and it's basically a retelling of Macbeth, when you go to a work like that, that is so immersive and it's done so incredibly well, it can be a life-changing experience.
Cool.
But when it's not done well, it can be incredibly awkward.
It can also be a life-changing experience.
Yeah, in a very different way. And I kind of live for that.
Like the flops.
Oh, yeah. Bad theatre junkies. Yeah. I know your kind. Yeah.
But I did see a good one.
You're people that like movies like Sharknado.
No, I don't. But I like my theatre like Sharknado.
Okay, fair.
No, there was a great one I saw a few years ago about Sodom and Gomorrah. And it started off like a dinner party that you just
Gamora
went to.
From The Avengers.
Yes. Okay, cool. Noted. And it was just like a dinner party with the actors around you. And I walked in being like, oh, it's going to be one of those shows. Oh, like, how do I get out of this room without them seeing me?
Where is the exit?
Where is the exit? But they sold it so well. And then the second half of the show was just a traditional sit down and watch kind of thing. But they did it so well. And I love that kind of theatre.
And I think, I mean, what's the, for me, the thing that's the same in my theatre practice, that's the same in my practice as a producer, is that it's about the audience at the end of the day, and it's about making work that puts them at the very centre and listens to them, takes care of them, pushes them a little bit, but you know, ultimately it's for them. And I think that's a problem often with so much work that's out there, is that you kind of go, who is this for? Why are you doing this? It's just yourself. And I think that's what we've done at Midsummer Festival as well, listen to our audiences.
I think that's what Midsummer feels like is, it feels like it's pushing us a little bit to be like, hey, look at this. This is important. But this is also a space for you to have a good time and catch up with your friends, which is what we know you want. And yeah, it gets that balance. That's a really hard balance to get right, I think. So
yeah, we talk a lot about like the Trojan horse effect at Midsummer. So for example, somebody who would probably go to Carnival, like a gay man that might go to Carnival, probably isn't going to go to one of those events I described before, like Body, and go and see, you know, an intersex artist do a direct 3-hour durational performance. That's probably not going to happen. So what we also do is we, you know, we have events like the Midsummer Extravaganza, which
cool this year. Tom produced that. It was an amazing show and I was so happy I went this year.
I was actually going to ask how much of your job is getting emails from Tom.
trying to get him to email me is a large part of my job.
Same. With the podcast.
But I mean, for our audiences, they go there and they go, great, Thomas Jaspers or, you know, Joel Creasy. They go expecting one thing. But then what we also give them is we also give them Stephen Oliver, who's, you know, one of the Aboriginal comedians from Black Comedy. And we also give them Mama Alto as well, who's a transgender musician. So we're giving them artists and experiences that they might not normally see. And so that's what we kind of think of as being the Trojan horse effect.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. Well, we're so happy to have you here with us this week. You'll be sticking around for the rest of the show. So let's get into it. It's been a tough month for the stars of Netflix's Queer Eye reboot.
Yeah.
Did you see me trying to...
Yeah, I saw the cogs turning in your head and you're trying to get the words out properly.
So
there's no straight guy anymore. It's just Queer Eye.
It's just Queer Eye. I've spoken about not being a fan of the show previously on this show.
But you hate joy, so...
But I hate good things, so I get it. You guys love it. Everyone's entitled to that. But it has been popping up in the news a lot recently with some more controversial things as well as some positive things. One of the biggest conversations that started most recently is a interview with the New York Times with Jonathan Van Ness, who I think is like objectively everyone's favorite out of the cast. Anyway, and he revealed some of the darker sides to the LGBT community and things that people probably didn't expect from Jonathan himself. And that was that he had a history of not only sexual abuse as a child growing up, but also that he was living as a HIV positive man.
Yeah.
It kind of opened up a bit of a can of worms for me, I think, as someone being outside of the fandom of the show. Because initially I was like, oh, is this... It was tied into... And also my memoir is coming out in 2 weeks' time, hit the link below sort of thing was the post I read. So I was really conflicted, being like, this is great. In terms of visibility and in terms of some of the real day-to-day struggles affecting our community, being the mental health side of things that we talk about on this show, the long-lasting effects of sexual abuse. Also, he opened up about a few stays in rehab and addiction to methamphetamines, which I think is also a really important topic and conversation we need to be having. And also, he's a positive role model for living with HIV and not being this grim reaper kind of figure that a lot of older Australians are used to seeing. But there's this sheen, this sort of commercialism that really negs me in a lot of way. I just kind of want to shut it down.
I thought it was really nice to see so much positive support to him for it, like on Facebook and all the social media, and just all the articles I've seen haven't had any negative spins. And I think that's really important and nice to see such a nice role model for someone living with HIV, because I don't think we've really had that in our society yet. Like, I mean,
Not to this level.
I mean, like, fucking Charlie Sheen. Better than Charlie Sheen. Like,
everyone's
better than Charlie Sheen. And, like, he's on a show that is promoting healthy lifestyle and is, like, a feel-good thing. And he's, like, such a breath of fresh air. And he's, like, nicest guy ever. So, yeah, it's hard to imagine that he had this kind of past. And I never used to really like him at all. I used to actually dislike him because I thought he was really fake. And I thought it was all on like a show, and I was like, oh, he's just like way too over the top.
Like an affectation.
Yeah, like I just thought it was like a character that he was doing. I was like, God, you're so annoying. But then as I've like watched more episodes and it's been around for longer, the show in general, I think he is definitely the most likable out of all of them, because he is just genuinely himself and he's just really sweet and lovely to everyone. So I'm happy for him that he has come out in this way. And that he's been met with such positive support and feedback.
And I think, I mean, the sheen of Queer Eye has absolutely, like, turns me off the program a bit. And it's become quite kind of artificial in a way, in terms of every episode just feels exactly the same.
Yeah.
But the reboot was really around going out of New York and going into some of the red states that voted for Donald Trump. Right. And accessing a kind of community that doesn't actually have access to kind of positive queer role models. But yeah, Jonathan's revelations or kind of coming out as HIV positive is absolutely attached to a kind of commercial outcome.
Yeah.
But in the same way of Queer Eye, it's also about finding a way to access people who don't necessarily have the same access to queer icons. That, I mean, we all kind of operate, everyone on this panel kind of operates in queer circles. So we have access to people that are HIV positive, that we know, that we trust and are friends with. But there are so many people in America who, particularly in those red states, that don't have access to that as well.
So sheltered.
Mm.
And so I think and Jonathan Van Ness kind of revealing this about himself is in so many ways just really about the kind of destigmatization of HIV.
I think it'll do a lot of good.
Good. And I know I'm being unrealistic here and that this isn't the point of Queer Eye as a show, but reading about his history and those struggles, I was like, that's what I want to see in a show. It's like, I want to see real gay men.
Mm-hmm. Like the nitty-gritty, like getting...
The nitty-gritty, having conversations that aren't exactly pleasant all the time. And I want to see those representations on TV. But when I watched it, I just felt like, this isn't for me.
Mm.
I don't get anything from this. I don't learn anything from this.
But for a lot of people, it would be a lot.
It felt like for straight people.
Yeah.
It felt like for heterosexual people, this is really great.
Yeah.
I think that's why it rubs me the wrong way. And it happened.
Like Ellen.
Well, it happened the first time Queer Eye for the straight guy originally came out. And a lot of the people who weren't exposed to the LGBT community, so heterosexual people, started to expand their worldview. And that was a great thing. But it was always through the filter of like, you know, I don't like gay people except those boys on Queer Eye, because they do this thing and they're pretty funny and they're entertaining and they've been watered down to a level that I can accept it.
Yeah, palatable, definitely.
They're palatable. Yeah. That's why I'm so conflicted about this. Yeah. I think it's absolutely amazing to have someone as visible. He's like a conglomerate. He's got his YouTube series. He's got his podcast.
He's literally everywhere you look.
Literally, you could not ask
gay Jesus
someone to be like more visible than him.
Turn to Jesus.
I mean, there's a lot that's edited out of Queer Eye as well. Yeah. And I mean, in the same New York Times article, Jonathan Ness talks about how in that Quincy episode where he goes back home to visit his high school, that there had been a letter from the local pastor that was printed in the local newspaper that was incredibly homophobic, that was saying we shouldn't be rolling out the red carpet for these homosexuals. It's an abomination, all that stuff. And yet we don't see that in Queer Eye. Yeah. So I think there is definitely an appetite for people to understand some of that darkness that does sit around the queer experience.
Yeah. And that's what I want to see. And I would hate to hear someone say something along the lines of, like, having HIV, like, being HIV positive is okay if you're like Jonathan Van Ness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it doesn't push my boundaries in any way. And I guess that's why everything about this show rubs me the wrong way. But I know that's not the way popular culture works.
But I feel like also at the same time, I can't hate him for making money and using things that people would perceive as bad, and he's kind of like working them for good and like making money from it.
Like we're giving it away for free every week.
Sign up to our Patreon, please.
When I was 12. That's terrible.
Wait, I paid to get supposed.
I think like, okay, like we've suffered as gay men like for our whole lives. So like, yeah, like use what you have and to better yourself and to get you where you need to be. So like I'm supportive of it in that way, and I think it is ultimately doing more good, and he is a great vision of health and promoting healthy lifestyle, and he looks healthy and lives a happy life. So
the other thing that rubbed me the wrong way about this article was it mentioned that he kept saying namaste.
Okay, he's cancelled. Change it. Backtrack everything.
And it just fed into the like, I want to click out of this tab.
But he is very extra. I feel like he just says literally anything.
But the journalist did say it seemed as though that when he says namaste, it really means please go away.
He's like namaste.
Yeah.
When I say I'm like namaste in bed.
But I think there's that campaign that's been going on for a few years now, which is the U equals U campaign, as a gay man, it took me a long time to understand what that even meant, you know, in terms of an undetectable viral load means that you can't, that it's untransferable. Is that what it means? And I think that by Jonathan Ness coming out and saying that he's HIV positive and saying that he has an undetectable viral load, which means that other men that he has sex with can't contract HIV, actually does something that the kind of complicated U equals U campaign hasn't been able to really translate to people, to the general public, which is that you can actually be HIV positive, that you can have an undetectable viral load,
live a normal life.
and live a normal, healthy sex life. Yeah. And that kind of work is actually, in terms of a PR campaign around HIV awareness, incredible.
Yeah. I think having an illustrated example of something is the most useful way of getting a point across. I was the same when that campaign started. I was Googling it, being like, what exactly is this? And then reading the other articles. But to have a human being say, hey, this is my experience and this is how it works, you get it.
And one that we know well already.
You get it really quickly. Right. And so I'm like, I would hate for someone to listen to this and think I'm like ragging on this whole sort of thing, because I'm not. I totally understand why you wouldn't come out with that information in the pilot episode of the Queer Eye reboot. I understand why that's like
gotta ease in towards
a personal decision that someone's made, and I commend someone anyone that makes that decision to be visible and use their voice on a public platform that people have had on this show discussing the same topic. Like, that's huge, and it does wonders for other people that may not be able to use their voice in the same way. I just don't like anything attached to that show, unfortunately.
The theme song is pretty good, though. And, you know, learning about how to do a French tuck. Also,
oh, my God,
pretty,
French
pretty
tuck.
Great.
I don't even know what that is.
Every single episode that I've ever seen of the show, Tan, he always does a French tuck. So, like, you just tuck in the front of your shirt and leave the back hanging out. But, like, every single person he comes across, he makes him do a French tuck.
And that weird little, that weird food guy.
And he just, like, is obsessed over avocados.
Always looks like he just woke up. I don't get it.
It's Luke.
Do you ever feel kind of uncomfortable sharing personal stories on this show itself?
Or do you do
that thing, you know, like,
where you feel
like JVN would have had to do, which is way up. Do I share this?
Yeah.
Do I give a voice to some people, or do I keep this to myself? Because
I think I definitely have. I'm not sure if I have anything that would affect people in that way, like in my own life, that I would be holding back. But I think definitely as we've done this podcast, I've become more open and become more comfortable in the space at sharing stories that have affected me throughout my life. But I think definitely at the start, I was very reserved with what I was sharing and kind of very worried about what I was putting out there, and like tried to filter a lot of it and curate what people were hearing of me. But now, I guess it's just more free.
I was warned before by a work colleague coming onto the show. He was like, you know, you might have to talk about like the worst sex you've ever had.
It does. It comes up a lot on the show. Tom's like opening story every week.
So Since you haven't been on the show before, I was just going to ask you to say your worst sex story.
Okay, go. That's our next topic.
Like, I wasn't that uncomfortable with it because I think anyone that comes within earshot of me, I'm generally like, this is wrong with me right now. And these are all the bad things that have happened, especially when it came to mental health.
Yeah.
I've said some things on the show like that I'm not very good at and said, oh, I'm not good at dealing with these kind of emotions, or I don't handle this very well. And that was kind of a hard thing to do, because up until the last 6 months or so, I thought it was literally just the four of us having a kiki in a room.
Like, I know, it is hard to like get your mind around until we do the live shows, and then you're like, shit, people are actually listening to this. Like, this is actually going out there. It's not just four of us in a room.
But I think every time you get a message from someone saying, hey, you said this thing on that episode, and that actually is exactly how I feel.
Honestly, it's so nice getting those messages. And thank you to all the people who do send them, and please continue to send them, because it actually affects us as well, and it really helps us know that we're doing some kind of good.
And Kyle and I have a joint memoir coming out next week.
Oh my God.
No, but I think it's important. And it reminded me that, yeah, I feel like it doesn't really belong to me anymore. It's
out there.
Yeah.
It's out there.
And I mean, in some ways, being vulnerable is the kind of queerest thing that we can do as well. You know, as queers, one of the things that we struggle with is this kind of respectability politics where we're constantly asked to be outstanding scholars or outstanding in the workplace and not to reveal any of the things that actually do happen in our personal lives, because, God forbid, that's going to reinforce a stereotype that we're all going to die alone or have horrific relationships or whatever, you know, all those stereotypes that exist. So in some ways, actually being vulnerable and showing some of those parts of our lives that are a bit darker, or as Jonathan says, you know, if you could see all of the parts of me, you know, you might not like me. And I actually think it is the queerest thing that we can
do. That's what I like about people. See, that's why that rubs me the wrong way. It's like, I want to see all the parts
straight up.
A queer experience.
It's why his hair's so big. It's full of secrets.
She's full of secrets. Have you met my cousin? But even things like, I don't want to like drag up some drama from a few weeks ago, but I feel like this got swept under the rug.
Can you please talk to me in private after?
Really quickly in our private chats. But like, even a few weeks ago, there was a drama with a store renovation that they were doing, where someone had tweeted saying, hey, I work at this store, and their production or someone involved with the show basically replaced all the staff on the day of shooting because they were 99% people of color working in that store.
Wow.
And they had called in actors and basically white people to be the extras in the background of the scene shot in a retail shop. It's just those little things like that. It just doesn't ring true to me. And I would much prefer if it was just all the dirt, the muck.
These broken people are going to help you today. It doesn't really have the same.
Yeah, I just came from the clinic. To help you guys. You know, that's the show I want to watch. It doesn't sound particularly entertaining, so I understand that. What's interesting to me will be to see if that conversation carries over.
Makes it way to like air.
To season four of Queer Eye, or if it's just something completely separate for the memoir. I would be interested.
You would think their whole message and what they're trying to get across, that it would.
Yeah, I'd like to see them queer eye each other. I think that would be really
cool. Oh my God, that'd be a good episode. They're like, we're going to fix you so that you can make other meals that don't contain guacamole.
I'm going to ghostwrite your memoir for you.
Pull out your French tuck.
Do you think this was kind of like what you mentioned about having to warm up into revealing more of yourself with JVN?
I think,
in terms of the timing of this.
Also, do we know how long he has had it, being HIV positive?
He was 25 and he's now 32, I think.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's definitely not something that's like happened during filming or anything. I guess it's pretty interesting because like he would have had like a long line of sexual partners, and that no one has actually kind of spilled this information yet into the world, or like there's been no rumors or anything like that.
Yeah. I think Reddit Nancy Drews can be some pretty terrible people, but I think in the LGBT community, there's like a line you do not cross, and that is announcing someone else's status. I kind of really respect that, especially someone who's doing well in the mainstream, that we haven't kind of cut our own poppies short or whatever that saying is.
Tall poppy syndrome? Oh, yeah.
Tall poppy syndrome or whatever, because I could see in a more competitive or someone using like that TMZ. Information.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he is one of it. Perez Hilton.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, he was a very nasty piece of work back in the day.
Did you see that video when Misha Barton like attacked him? No. Someone's like someone's social media, and then she was like confronting him because isn't she in the Hills now or something?
And then she confronted
him about like all the damage he like did to her in her like younger years.
That website used to be brutal. Everything.
Yeah, he did a lot of bad. So that was kind of cool. Get some kind of comeuppance.
But I think there's been a level of respect. I could only assume that he would have disclosed this information to partners. You know, over the last 10 years or so.
Do you think all the other cast members would have known? Like, do you think he would have been that open with them?
I have no idea. Yeah. There's stuff I don't tell you.
Yeah. Most things.
But I do imagine that the process of getting onto that show would have been brutal. Oh, and they would have done so much background work into each and every single person that auditioned to be on it. And so I imagine the producers must have known, surely.
Definitely. Luckily, the producers weren't from World of Wonder. Because they would have been like, talk about your trauma, episode 2.
While applying makeup. Oh boy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Three of the biggest comedy queens are touring Australia from October this year.
Josh Thomas is returning home for his first live show since his humble little TV show Please Like Me enjoyed international success. Whoopsie Daisy gets started this October in Brunswick Heads before taking in Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, Cairns, Brisbane and Perth.
And fresh from her Emmy win, Hannah Gatsby brings her new show Douglas Down Under. Forget Netflix and experience it live and in person. Nanette did alright, I guess.
I guess.
So be sure to catch this brilliant overnight success, only 10 years in the making.
Douglas kicks off in December, touring to Melbourne, Hobart, Canberra, Sydney and Brisbane before visiting Auckland and Wellington. Some sessions are already sold out, so you better get your asses into gear.
And an evening with David Sedaris is filled with storytelling, brilliant reflections, unpublished yarns and book signings with everyone's favourite satirist.
Unlike Kyle, a master of wit.
You fuck.
Unlike Kyle, a master of wit. Don't miss your opportunity to spend an evening with one of the world's distinguished queer comedy writers, enjoying a night of autobiographical and self-deprecating tales.
David Sedaris will visit Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Canberra in January.
Head over to comedy.com.au for full touring details and to book tickets.
This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you pretend that this can be solved with just business as usual and some technical solutions? You are failing us. But the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you. not let you get away with this. Right here, right now, is where we draw the line. The world is waking up. And change is coming, whether you like it or not. Thank you.
So if you haven't heard of, if you haven't heard of our latest queer icon, Greta Thunberg, she's this really awesome 16-year-old girl. Where's she from? Sweden. Sweden. Yes. She's Swedish? Yeah. Yes. And she's spearheaded this whole climate change strike all around the world. And she's also been nominated for Nobel Peace Prize. And yeah, it would be hard to miss the strike happening in Melbourne on Friday. So the number of people striking in Australia was 330 friggin' thousand. In London, 100,000. New York, 250,000. So that is by far the world's biggest strike on climate change.
And one in Chinchilla, one school student.
One in Chinchilla, Queensland. Well, yeah. That's how it all started with Greta. Well, she was striking after school or skipping school.
Oh, yeah, her Fridays for Future every Friday.
So,
yeah.
Hey, there's hope. Like, you can do it. I mean, hurry up because the world's ending. But yeah, like, are we environmental gays here? did you guys attend the strike yourselves?
Look, I'm not. Mikey is appointed environmental gay. For anyone that, I think we've joked
about
it. We
mentioned this joke, but no one's gotten it because I think it was off air.
In an advertisement. For anyone listening that doesn't understand that reference,
yeah,
we got to record an ad really early on in the podcast days before we really knew each other.
Mm.
And Mikey had just got the line that said, as an environmental gay, I really like appreciate this product. And the four of us lost our shit because
we're like,
out of the little that we knew about Mikey, him being an environmental gay was not one of those things.
So now we just refer to him as the environmental gay.
Yes.
And hopefully he's having a great time in Bali or Korea. I don't know where he is at the moment, but he's somewhere. Where on earth is Carmen Sandiego, Mikey?
Being environmental. But
being environmental gay, sure.
I'm not the most environmental person. Like, I smoke, which I'm sure doesn't
not great for the environment.
Not great. I read an article that said using reusable bags makes you look gay, so I stopped doing that. I'm joking.
I was like, why
not? Not about the article, though. That's a real article.
Yeah. Did you guys see the speech that she gave that everyone is reposting? Quite powerful.
So good.
Do you know what she reminded me of when she was speaking? She sounds like Björk.
A little bit.
I know she's not from the same place, but she sounds a lot like her to me.
She reminds me of the girl in Game of Thrones. You know, the the North.
The stroppy little one.
No, she's like 12 years old and she, you know, she becomes like a clan leader she's totally fierce. Yeah, stroppy one. Basically the same person in my mind.
Crushed by the giant.
Spoilers, Luke.
They can cut it out. I've only seen the last episode.
Yeah, she dies in a really cool way.
And I think anyone that has been totally lampooned by Andrew Bolt is... you know, is a hero legend to me.
I think there's a connection between like young activism and queer people. Like, we just admire, respect, and try our best to lift up those people. Because I remember when Greta first started popping up in social media, it was a lot of gay accounts that were sharing, you know, images of her and speeches and articles about her. Because I think we know that activism intrinsically and how difficult it is and how important it is.
Gays stan a powerful woman.
And we stan a powerful woman. So it was kind of like she is, I know we joke, but she is kind of an ideal queer icon.
She really is. And her head's in the right place. She's doing really, our next leader.
Well, I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, she's 16 now. And it will actually be really incredibly interesting to see what it would be like when she does leave school properly and graduate and what she actually, what kind of career she has in front of her.
I mean, has she peaked now?
Well, that's because we sometimes have this like idealistic view of young people doing political things or doing well. Yeah. So like young fashionistas or whatever, that when they hit the adult realm and they just operate at an adult level, the interest is lost.
It's less exciting.
I hope that doesn't happen here because she's already raised to a level that we probably never will in our lives at 16 and is talking about an issue that it's kind of baffling that it's even up for debate, really. Yeah.
And it's sad that it's all the children and teens that are the ones that are the most well-informed and the ones striking and the ones coming up with fantastic bloody signs. Have you seen some of the signs that they made for the strikes? Like the puns and stuff that they used. Don't treat Earth like Uranus.
Clearly written by a straight person.
Yes.
Guy who liked that one.
Picked
that one out to read.
Oh yeah, there was someone saying my ginger kid won't survive a 2-degree increase in the climate.
That's pretty brutal. Good.
Yeah.
I mean, there was also a lot that were referring to ScoMo shitting himself.
Yeah, what the hell?
I had no idea. And then suddenly I found myself going into an internet wormhole where apparently ScoMo shat himself in a regional McDonald's.
He looks like someone who would.
Who hasn't been there?
Like, I think one of the signs said, I could have been at Area 51 today, but thought this was more important. That's such a weird thing. Like, have you seen the whole Area 51 thing blowing up all over the
storming.
Internet? And people like storming Area 51 to go save E.T.
I have.
I mean, I wish those people would maybe like, if they gave more of a shit about climate change.
Well, this guy did.
This guy did. Good on him. I mean, I wish all these other people put their time to good use.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things about this climate strike as well, is that, sure, there was, you know, Treasury Gardens was completely filled in Melbourne of people, but there are still so many people who had no idea that it was happening, who don't actually really care about climate change, or have probably, like many of us, kind of just almost given up hope in a way and kind of gone, oh, well, no one's doing anything about it.
Guess I'll die.
I saw that documentary, you know, 10 years ago and nothing changed. So, you know, and I think there is a real impact that can be made by, in terms of consciousness raising that has been achieved through this protest and because of Greta as well.
I think having an icon or like a figurehead to a movement is super important.
Definitely.
Young people organized a lot of these strikes and school strikes through TikTok. Something
that
as,
app,
as
yeah,
like
it's like the, the weird tools of that they use.
Young
like
people get things, and it made me realize, oh, I'm officially an old person.
Yeah, looking at all the pictures of the protest made me feel very old.
I don't understand this, and it is, like Daniel said, it's an issue that I'm almost resigned to in a lot of ways. That when I heard about the protest, I was like, oh, that's cool for other people to do, but you know, I've been around that block before, and It's nice to see a new blood.
I'm kind of ashamed to say that I've never actually been to a protest in my life.
Oh, you weren't here. We actually talked about LGBT activism and being engaged. And I think I read you.
Oh, probably.
But it's not really, I think, it's for like, our generation, protesting isn't really a thing that we do. I mean, it was big in the, you know, obviously the 70s and around Vietnam and all that. But I think it's totally made a resurgence. And a colleague of mine is doing some consultation work with young people in the outer northern suburbs of Melbourne. And they're all high school students. And the topic was, what's important to you? How do you want to, you know, talk about what's important to you? And all these young people were like, oh, well, we'll rally. That's what we'll do. And it's kind of because of Greta Thunberg, it's kind of become the kind of default way of expressing yourself for young people. So I think we're also seeing a kind of generational shift as well in terms of how people can gather in public space and express themselves.
And with all this happening, do we actually even think that this is even enough? I mean, it's such a large scale thing that's happened, but is it still even enough to
TikTok.
Get people to like, TikTok specifically, get people to change for the better? I mean, like, they had the UN climate change summit yesterday. So I think not a lot changed there. So like,
well, the UN's
what
difficult.
More can we do? Like, I mean, everyone can always obviously do more. I definitely can. I know that. Like, I'm getting better. Like, I guess I have my keep cup, and like, I don't use single-use plastic bottles anymore. I don't drive. I mean, it's not like a choice thing, but I'd like to think that that helps in some way.
I believe civil unrest
and
things like protesting and rallies are more effective in terms of creating a dialogue, raising awareness of something through sheer blunt force. If you don't care about climate change, you care about why the fuck you can't get home on time on Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And you want to know...
Making conversations,
You want to know what the hell is going on. So you Google, you rally Melbourne Friday and you go, oh, it's for climate change. Is that a thing still? And I think these kind of movements have a great effect on that, on expanding the public consciousness to be like, oh, well, now everyone has to hear about this and think about it. In terms of like tracking that to a clear political shift or change, it hasn't really happened in my lifetime.
Yeah, I think the best thing that came out of the UN summit yesterday was just this video of Greta Thunberg
oh my God,
scowling
when she staring at Trump. Oh my God, someone I saw that and someone played like the Kill Bill like siren like music in the background. It was great.
That's this button.
Yeah. but yeah, like fucking assholes like Trump and then like ridiculing her. I mean, all those people like sticking their head in the sand about it. Very infuriating.
I mean, one of the interesting things about the summit was that in order to speak at it, you had to demonstrate an action plan for your country around climate change.
Yeah.
I mean, I think largely it's been pretty ineffective, but but the UN is kind of lifting its game in terms of what it's expecting countries to do. But I mean, the goal is pretty simple. Like, we've got to stop temperatures rising 1.5 degrees. You know, that's all we need to do. But it's incredibly frustrating and disheartening in terms of just how little political will there is. But I think voting is a really great way to do that. You know, it's actually quite simple, and politicians care about votes at the end of the day. And so if they know that climate change is important to the people who vote them in, then it will something will be done about it. And interestingly, Australia wasn't invited to speak at the climate summit.
Shocker.
Because we have no plan. We have absolutely no plan. And if anything, we're going backwards in terms of climate change.
Yeah, I saw David Attenborough was even slamming ScoMo for the coal stuff.
Not good old Attenborough.
Right. He's going to have a heart attack from the stress. He's so old.
Hate our poor homeland. Guy. It's It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks, just a little bit. It's not great.
I just,
But yeah, I think I forgot who said it, but like the greatest threat to this planet is the idea that people just expect someone else to fix it. So it's like you really need to like take charge.
And then the homosexuals.
Yeah, and then the gays riding dinosaurs.
Climate change is the fault. But, I mean, divestment is also a really important part. I think there's something like $11 trillion in money that is being divested out of non-renewable energy. And so that, I mean, that's superannuation companies that are doing that. It's banks that are doing that. It's who we choose to have our super with. Those kind of small choices around where we're actually investing our money, that also has a really powerful change as well. I think what I try to do in my workplace is to talk about how we can have a sustainable workplace as well. And I think that's another kind of small way that you can kind of go about impacting that kind of small circle around you. Like the other day I took, we have like all these rubbish bins in our office that are all plastic bags, and every night the cleaners come and empty them, whether there's rubbish in them or not. So now I've just hidden all the rubbish bins. We have one rubbish bin in the office. So, and it fills up, and at the end of the day it gets emptied. And, you know, just little things like that, that are changes that you can make that actually do have over time quite a big effect. But I still sometimes use a don't use a keep cup every now and then. You know,
you're a monster. But did you see people even like spreading like false news in the way that like people saying all the protesters left all their like single-use plastic behind, and then they posted photos all over social media of just like a trashed field, but then the Nancy Drews of the world found out that that was actually a photo from Hyde Park like years ago where they didn't even protest.
I thought you were going to say a photo from like after a pride festival or something.
Although, I mean, no one wants to see that. You should see the site of Alexandra Gardens after Carnival.
After Carnival,
Yeah, the mess. There was a couch there last year. Yep.
Literally single-use couch.
Yeah, and an inflatable pool. Oh like, it God. Just kind of crazy, the amount of rubbish. So I do think in some ways, queers, you got to lift your game.
I think so. I think that's an interesting topic. You know, we are very politically minded people, and some members of our community, like Mikey, are very green. But also, as a community, are we lifting our weight enough? And sometimes I don't think so. We have a kind of a lean towards the aesthetic. I remember once debating whether I wanted a keep cup and then going like, no, it's a bit ugly. Like, I don't want to carry that around.
But there's such pretty ones now. I want to get this nice ceramic
one. And now there's pretty ones, so I have one. But I thought like, oh, this is me like letting my stupid social hierarchy needs play into...
And when we think about like the force that went into from queer communities that went into marriage equality,
exactly
that was put into climate change.
We can get stuff done, people.
We can absolutely get stuff done.
Yeah,
but I think in many ways we've kind of gone, oh, we've achieved the fight. You know, we've done the thing that was important to us. And I mean, there's that Naomi Klein wrote that really famous book on climate change, This Changes Everything, which is a very long book. And I didn't realize that when I downloaded it on my Kindle.
I finished it on Audible.
I've been on 5% for a very long time. But in that book, she talks about like the sort of way that rights are actually intersectional in many ways. And that, you know, the kind of golden rule of climate change is that those that have done the least to cause it are the ones that will suffer the most effects. And that is, you know, First Nations people. And we see that with Standing Rock, you know, and we see that across in the Pacific as well, and a lot of those countries that are severely poor and completely rely on
aid.
It's
so unfair.
You know, and so, and we see it with young people as well, and I think that's why people like Greta Thunberg are rising up as well.
Yeah, like in her speech, she was like scolding people. She was saying, we won't forgive you.
Yeah, but then the other question is like, what kind of world are we leaving for these young people that we're investing in as well?
And that is another show done. Thank you so much, Daniel, for coming, joining us.
And you'll be joining us for our interview with David Henderson.
It's a new formula. We just get a guest on and then they interview and then they interview the next guest. So he's going to interview another guest after that. And we're just going to keep going.
It's like the chain letters. You must interview and four people.
It's like, have you seen the movie It Follows? It just goes back down the line.
It does sound more like Human Centipede.
And where can people find you?
I'm one of the few people that still use Twitter. So D_Santangeli. So you can find me on there. But also I want to plug, it's embargoed, but I'm just going to say it anyway, that The Gays Are Revolting will be having a live podcast during Midsummer Festival.
Holy shit.
And we launch our program on the 20th of November. So you'll be able to buy tickets from then, which is pretty exciting.
Damn. Our next one's in Adelaide, the City of Churches.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have heard that.
City of Churches, also from South Australia, which is the murder capital of Australia.
So, fun.
So only three of you will come.
Are we doing
back.
Our live show in a church? And then we elect one audience member and we murder them.
If you're a fan of any of those things, you can head to our Facebook page and book yourself a ticket. Don't forget to subscribe to our Patreon.
So you can get access to our after shows, like the one we're about to talk about right now.
Oh, yeah. Also, the other thing I really love is when you guys post us on your Instagram stories.
Oh my
if
God.
You're listening to us, it's a little kick that we get.
Yeah, I feel famous.
Yeah. So brighten our days and keep doing that because we love it.
It's cool.
Well, we'll guess you'll see you guys in the after show.
See you in the afterlife show.
All right.
Bye.
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 Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.